Hi everyone, and this is another episode on Speaking Terms, and we're talking to Alexandra Debar today. Alexandra is a founder of a very cool restaurant called Burger 28, which has got around 7 branches all over UAE. Alexandra is an expert in investments and developing business in UAE, and he's also fascinating because he built his business out of his media brand. Today we're talking food, burgers, and we're talking media brand and business. Welcome, welcome, Alexandra.
Thank you very much.
I'm passing it over to you to please introduce yourself.
Sure. Well, I wouldn't label myself as an expert, but I have a few years of experience in business, as you said, in the F&B industry, creating a media brand, a personal brand, and also a media brand for my business, Burger 28. I was born and raised in the UAE in Abu Dhabi. My mom and dad met here around 45 years ago. Wow. So this is really home. I've seen it grow from very, very humble place and humble beginnings into this metropolis that we now have in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And it's incredible to see that growth take place. And it's really a pleasure to have been part of it. And thank you for having me.
No, I'm so excited about this conversation. So what made you start your own business back in the days? So you were born, raised, you studied in UAE, multiple sort of, scenarios how you could potentially sort of build your career. What made you think about the food business, about your own business instead of, let's say, some permanent job? Maybe mm-hmm. You can tell me about that.
Yeah, so from KG1, which is when I started school, I went to ACS, the American School of mm-hmm. Abu Dhabi. I think that's around like 4 or 5 years old when you start. And when I reached 15, which was ninth grade, it was all the same people. It was such a small community. I mean, a lot of people now probably see so many people coming in and out of schools and whatnot. But back then, it was literally like the same 30 people that I had been 5 years old. 10 years later, now we're 15 years old. So there was something inside of me that wanted to experience something else. So I told my parents that I wanted to go to boarding school, which is strange because most people get forced to go to boarding school.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's true.
The parents want to get rid of them. Yeah, yeah. But in my case, I actually wanted to experience something different. I'm also half English, half French. I spent a lot of summers in England with my mother on, you know, summer break and stuff. My dad, unfortunately, was working too hard to come all the time. So England had a place in my heart. So I went to boarding school in England, again, to an ACS, which was an American community school. And I did 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade there. In 12th grade, I really wanted to become a lawyer. So that was, I had my heart set on, I'm a planner. So I'm really logical with things. Like, you can ask my wife about it. Like, even with her, I'm super logical about everything, you know, and I plan everything in my life. So I always wanted to be a lawyer. And then in 12th grade, I applied to law school, but that was right in 2006. So mm-hmm. right close to the financial crisis. So the demand for lawyers actually dipped and they were not doing like letting people into university and such mass. So I said, look, let me take a year off. So I took a year off. I moved back to Abu Dhabi. I worked with my dad for a year and then I went to law school in London. Now, I think in my second year, I did an internship and it was like the most prestigious internship you could get from WASTA or whatever with my dad's friend or you know how it goes. Mm-hmm. I managed to land this internship at a really, really big law firm in Paris. And it was 2 weeks, I think. And I was so excited. I was going to live in Paris in my brother's apartment. He wasn't going to be there. It was just going to be me and my dreams. And I went and I hated it.
Really?
I could not stand it.
Wow.
So at that point, I was like, yo, I do not want to be a lawyer. And I do not want to be in this corporate world or any of this. So in law in England, after 3 years, you do your LLB, you have to take a law practitioner's course. Mm-hmm. That's before you do your training contract. Mm-hmm. So I quickly had to make a decision. I am not doing my law practitioner's course. What are my other options? So I chose to do a master's of science in management at CAS Business School.
Yeah.
And then after that, I moved to Africa. So I moved to Benin, which is a small country next to Nigeria, in between Togo and Nigeria. And I spent 3.5 years to 4 years in between Benin and Nigeria doing a bunch of different businesses. The most lucrative business out of all of that was actually importing apples, not iPhones, but the fruit from South Africa into Nigeria.
Yeah.
And we were selling in the mass market. So I was literally in the nitty gritty, like in the markets with the mamas, like selling apples. Yeah, it was an incredible experience. I say that's like my life MBA.
Of course. Yeah, that sounds so fascinating. So you were enjoying this more than, let's say, a law internship in Paris. Like, I mean, that's
for
fascinating.
Sure.
That's
yeah.
just
I mean, I can't tell you what it's like to really work for somebody else. When I moved to Africa, I moved with a very, very close friend of mine, mm-hmm. and I worked with him and his father, but not as an employee. As a shareholder or as an investor or however capacity, I had skin in the game. So if we made money, I made money. If we didn't, we didn't.
Right.
So I've never actually worked for anyone. I don't really know what that feels like. I have advised a few companies where I've been told what to do at times and I can't stand it. So I don't really like being told what to do in general. So I don't know how I would fare in the corporate world. I was actually speaking to my friend yesterday and he works in a big company. And I said, I'm really curious, like, what would I have been able to achieve if I worked in a massive corporation? You know, would I have known how to play the politics? Would I have known how to, like, get to the higher level by doing whatever you need to do? So, I mean, you always are curious what life could have been like. And I think one of the most important maxims in life is grass is always greener on the other side. But in reality, sometimes it's not necessarily.
I think that's very wise, for sure. So how did you happen to have a restaurant in the UAE eventually? So you,
sure.
Yeah.
So after around 3.5 years or 4 years, as I mentioned, I can't remember, I need to go back. I decided to move back to the UAE. The two key reasons for that was, number one, the government changed in Nigeria and there was a massive sort of economic change that took place. And the Naira, which is the currency, devalued.
Right.
And we were buying in US dollars. We were selling in Naira and we were holding perishable stock. We were holding fruits, right? So when you have $250,000 that you owe a supplier and your stock is supposed to be worth 350, but then suddenly the Naira starts to depreciate and your stock now is not worth the 350 that it was, etc. It brings a lot of complications. And I think it's hard enough to run a business when you don't have all these macroeconomic factors weighing down on you. Mm-hmm. So I decided to come back. I mean, one of the plus points of the UAE is what? Number one, stable government. Mm. Number two, stable currency. And number three, safety. Nigeria is not the safest country in the world. However, I never ever felt threatened once. They are some of the sweetest, sweetest people. And one thing that I learned there is how important humor is. Because no matter what situation you're in Nigeria, the police pull you over, the guy who has tax, you need to do this or whatever problem you have, if you can make them laugh, you can get out of any situation.
Wow.
And I think that humor is the most underrated thing in the world. And if you understand how to harness humor and how to make somebody laugh, you really have a quality that has so much value. And I try and work on that on a regular basis after learning that in Africa. So, sorry, I didn't get to your question.
No, it's fine. No, I like it because this is actually the start of a different topic, but we'll come back to it later. Like, how did you find your unique voice? Now I know the origin, mm-hmm. right? But coming back to the start of your brand of Burger 28 and overall media journey. So when did it happen?
Sure. So yeah. I left Nigeria. I moved back here. My family were here. So I came to be with my family and come back to, you could say, my roots. And I believe in serendipity, you know, life kind of pushes you in certain directions. And I think you need to be aware of that. As you get older, you become more in tune with it.
Right.
And food had worked in the past, right? Apples, for example, their food products. So I was looking at what other businesses I could start. One of them was a diabetic chocolate brand, because obviously there's quite a lot of issues with diabetes and stuff here.
True.
So that was one thing. Another thing was a jam brand, mm-hmm. a specialist jam from France. And then I found this burger joint in Sharjah and it was a little hole in the wall. And this was before Sharjah and Muela area was all built up or anything like that. And a friend had told me about it and he's like, this place is rammed. It's so, so busy. I said, really? Hmm. He's like, yeah, you need to go check it out. So I drove down there from Abu Dhabi And the place was rammed. So I started looking at it. I'm like, okay, how much money are these guys making? So I started to do the unit economics. So I went in, obviously I made friends with the people working there, you know, how's business? Oh, fantastic, sir. It's going really well. And then I obviously saw what the average order value was. And then I sat there for maybe in total, I would say 4 days, not all consecutively, but ad hoc, and calculated how much revenue they were making. And they were making like 15 to 16,000 dirhams a day, a hole in the wall. Mm-hmm. I said, dude, if that is going to work in Sharjah, there's no reason why it's not going to work in Abu Dhabi. So yeah, the rest is history. So I opened Burger 28 in 2016.
Right.
In Mohammed bin Zayed City, which was a place where it's a suburb of Abu Dhabi. So it wasn't really built up, but there were a lot of people building their houses. Schools were moving there. Universities were moving there. And we were the first restaurant in that suburb. So, I mean, from the get-go, business was extremely, extremely good.
Interesting. So how many restaurants are you now? How big is your online audience as well? Which is like really, really interesting how you so build upon that.
Speaking about like an online audience, I built my business off cheap Instagram and Facebook ads. Okay.
So love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fact. Like before Facebook came out, I couldn't afford a billboard. I can't afford to be on the radio. Yeah. I can't afford to be on TV, etc. Right. So social media really democratized the ability for a business to reach a mass audience for a very, very low amount of money.
Absolutely.
Now, Facebook ads obviously are not as cheap as they used to be. But I think at one point we were spending like 60 or 70,000 dirhams a month on Facebook and Instagram ads. I think from inception, and we've really slowed down because now I create a lot of organic content. I think we've spent like 1.8 to 2 million dirhams on Facebook ads since 2016. But that allowed us to scale really fast. We opened our second location less than one year before the first location. Then we scaled into Dubai just before COVID. We had a location in Ras Al Khaimah, which we closed down. We had a location also in Dubai Mall, which we also closed down. So there's been ups and there's been downs. But I firmly believe that any entrepreneur now who wants to be successful needs to understand how to control and manipulate their narrative using social media and benefit from the fact that one post can reach so many people. Depending on how creative you are, depending on the industry you're in and all of that.
I was going to mention, so it depends. So you started with the ads, probably at 2016, the competition in terms of the advertising on Instagram here in UAE was not that massive.
For sure.
I mean, it's saturated now. So you need, there's a big need to find your unique narrative, as you mentioned, your unique voice.
Yeah.
And work towards, you know, organic content consistency rather than you know, to pay, definitely paying for it is helping. But I'm more interested to ask you about your journey in terms of looking for the narrative. Or how what content did you start with, let's say back in the days, and how did you come to what you're posting now? Obviously it was evolving, I guess.
Yeah, so on my personal page I wasn't posting. So right. When I had first set up my account on Instagram, I remember it vividly for Burger 28. I was scared to make the first post.
Oh, no.
I didn't know what to do. Like, should I post? Should I not post? And I remember my one friend, Julian, he's like, dude, just post. You know what I mean? And see what happens. And I remember clicking that very first post. And I need to pull it up, actually. I haven't looked at it. I think it was our famous burger called the Arbab.
I was going to ask, what is your most famous burger in Burger 28?
We have two chicken burgers. One is the Arbab and then one is the Nar, which comes with flaming hot Cheetos. So those are really like our signature dishes, right, which are kind of out there. But I personally didn't create my own content. I was only creating content for Burger 28. But what really made us famous was something called the Cheese Volcano, which is basically we put a can filled up with cheddar cheese and Cheetos on top. And then you video it being pulled and it's like a whole explosion onto your burger. That went viral back in the day. And that's really where I was like, okay, I can reach a massive audience without having to pay.
Yeah.
So that kind of led me on my journey to create organic content. For my personal content, I only really started in February.
Right.
Properly, like really going all out and focusing as much effort as I can on it. And now it takes up a lot of my time, but I love it. So it doesn't feel like work.
So I get often asked, just because I've been like in podcasting and content creation, and we just discuss those who are creating content for, let's say, B2B businesses, for themselves as well. So the question that bothers everyone is how not to get drained, how not to get tired of getting out there almost every day. And with you, for example, if you look at your reels, they also have like a joke behind, like there is some thought behind. They're meaningful, they're thoughtful, they're full of humor. It's a big effort to create reels like that. So what it takes you, maybe you can...
It definitely is a massive effort to create them, but I think not everybody is meant to be creating content. You know, and you need to see whether it's something you enjoy, because it's all about consistency. And there's no way you can be consistent if you don't actually love doing it. And that doesn't mean in the beginning it's not a headache, or in the beginning it doesn't take a lot of your effort. But everything in life is about systems. Yeah. So you need to create your system. So I would say it took me around 3 months to create my system. Now, from a idea generation perspective, I have my system. I have notes. And I have like a couple folders. I have segregated them into different types of content. So one is for podcasts, one is funny content, one is business content, one is something else. And when it comes to actually creating the content, you train your mind to be creative. We're all creative.
Yeah.
But you have to train your mind. Mm. So now my mind, I can see a content piece now. I have an idea of something that could happen that would be funny, where I'm going to bring in the guy watching us over there, videoing us in a really creepy way. No, I'm kidding. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already creating sets in my head, but that's because I've trained myself to do that. And anyone can do it, in my opinion. But some people are not happy to be in front of the camera. And a lot of people are scared to put themselves out there for that reason. But I think more and more, like 4 years ago, if somebody was creating content, you'd be like, what, do you want to be an influencer? Yeah. Now everybody's like, I wish I created content 4 years ago. Because if I had 500,000 followers, I can pretty much sell anything that I create.
That's right.
Everybody's looking for an audience to monetize.
This is absolutely true. But I mean, I want to ask you, have you ever come across like a serious hater situation? Like people will tell you like, dude, what are you doing?
But every day,
you're
man.
A man, right?
Yeah, no, but look at my comments. Every day I have some nitpicker or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, constantly. And before I didn't answer, I didn't really read them or I didn't answer them. But actually, I had a podcast with Tonye, who's a Nigerian guy who creates business content as well. And he's like, I actually go and talk to every single one. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that. And I did it. And incredibly, actually, your reach increases when you engage with them. So every time the guy's commenting and you're commenting back, you're getting more views and more views and more views and more views.
Because people like conflicts online, right? People like seeing
people. At the end of the day, there's a level of controversy where people start to have a discussion. Right. And you need to find that fine line between what is the controversy and what is actually appropriate for your business. Like for me, things which go viral at the moment is why I charge you extra money for sauce. People get so upset about that, which is, it's shocking. Like there's so many terrible things going on in the world and you are upset because if you don't want the extra sauce, you don't have to pay. Maybe if you ask nicely, I'll probably give it to you for free. You know what I mean?
That's hilarious. No, honestly, that's very surprising, right?
Yeah.
And then they get very upset and then they comment.
So upset. Like, wow, it's mind-boggling.
You should use it as a marketing tool.
Yeah, I do. But now sure. I do. Yeah. Like, I just posted another video which made no sense. If they watched it to the end, they would have realized that it didn't make any sense. Just to see the nitpickers like, get so upset. You know?
Yeah, yes. But why do you charge 50 dirhams for a burger anyway?
Because that's how much it costs.
And why do you charge for the extra? Yes.
The food cost is 30%. Yeah. The talabat cost, which 75% of our revenue goes through, is another 30-35%. And the rest goes to pay for salaries, goes to pay for rent, goes to pay for marketing, goes to pay for everything else.
Yeah.
But people get triggered. It's so funny. I say, this is why I charge 50 dirhams for a burger, for example. And I say, this much is for rent. This much is. And they're like, why? We have to pay for your rent? It's like, yeah, that's how business works. Like, are you that ignorant? Do you not understand how capitalism and business works? And there actually are a lot of people who are just nitpickers who don't even understand anything and want to comment. That being said, most people who are going to comment, it's like giving feedback is usually negative feedback.
Right.
But if you look at, let's say you got like 100 comments from 1 million views. What's 100 comments? You know what I mean? Even if they are negative, who cares? And if you're not hurting people, you're not disrespecting culture, disrespecting people's religion, or disrespecting any of this. Like, I see it as harmless.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I like the fact that you've got your point of view on how do you react to those comments and how do you manage, you know, and you actually get an outcome out of it. I mean, as long as it's not impacting your, let's say, mental health, mental state, I think that's totally.
I think a younger me, like a 15, 16 year old, and then this is where maybe it is a little dangerous, would be impacted. And,
right.
But at the end of the day, these are all probably kids who are bullies or get bullied in school, and they need to take it out on somebody. And you know what? If you want to take it out on me, I'm happy. And I'll just hold my head up and be a better man.
And they're trying to engage, I think, with something that is cool as well. So, but I'm sure you've got a lot of fans as well.
So, I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah. I'm one of those. Well, I've never tried your burgers though, but I like your content and your reels are hilarious. I don't know. Now you told me that you've got actually ideas in your head. Do you have a team that supports you?
I don't have a team, but I have a mentor.
Right.
And that mentor is Fahad. Fahad Kalim.
I know him. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's been my mentor since February, and he's really allowed me to kind of channel my energy into this creativity, which I didn't really know I had. I was actually quite curious about always being an actor. Like, I can do different voices. I can act out. And then I kind of suppressed it when I got to like my 20s, 21, trying to be like super serious and stuff like that.
Why is that, by the way?
I'm not sure. Maybe I thought, or I felt like I needed to be more mature than I was. And I thought that maybe adults were different to like teenagers, but then you realize that no one really grows up. Their body gets a bit older, but up here is still like, people still want to laugh. They want to have a good time. They want to feel like a kid again. Anything that's nostalgic makes you happy.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things in Burger 28 is that we bring in nostalgic items that when we were growing up in the UAE, we used to eat, like Chips Oman, Cheetos, Shani, all these kinds of things. So yeah, I've kind of allowed that to come out again and fostered it. And he's been a big part of that. So
it's been several months of really intense content. So do you foresee that this is going to stay stable? Do you think that it's okay to sort of, if your voice will evolve, you will start creating something else? Do you feel enough energy in like getting out there every day, creating something on your personal account as well, or on your brand account?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that it hasn't even been a year yet. It's turned in from being like something that I had to, again, systemize and get used to now it's just second nature. Like every Tuesday I create maybe like 10 videos.
Wow.
And then every Thursday I create like 17 videos. So I constantly, like, if you do the math, I constantly have backup of everything. It's super easy. I enjoy it. I think coming back to your point of how will it evolve, I think you can evolve in any way you want, right? You're constantly getting new followers in different content. So all my content was about Burger 28 to begin with. Now I'm quite passionate about cars. I love cars.
Yeah,
so
I've
slowly brought cars in. In the beginning, people don't get it, right? Because their people were only... This is similar to somebody creating English content and then you post an Arabic piece of content on your English page. People not expecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had the burgers, I had the business. Now I've brought in the cars.
Yeah.
And I'll continue to bring in things that interest me that I want to talk about. But I think the important thing there is let's say I got on this burger, so like this video, 1 million views, where I talk about burgers and the price and this. And then I post a car video and I get 2,000 views.
Yeah.
I don't care. That's the thing. Can you actually not care? Because on the 20th car view, you're now getting 50,000 views on the car view because now you've brought in a bunch of people who are also interested in cars. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think that's also something that a lot of people need to think about is, especially on TikTok now, you can have a video that goes 2 million views and then you can have a video with 1,000 views on the same page. So how do you deal with the 1,000 views? You know, when your only metric, really, when you're looking at it, like if I'm going to compare you to me to you or anyone's in comparison, is what's your views and what's your followers? you know?
I agree. So the secret is basically to talk about something that interests you, regardless of your life stage. So, for example, you can bring in probably topics or hobbies or, mm-hmm. I mean, people or, I don't know, anything that relates to you very much and that probably keeps you up. I'm just concluding this particular part.
I'll just interrupt you on that. 100%.
Yeah.
Now, every single business is trying to figure out how to not have competition.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And every single business, one way or another, has like a fundamental shift. And I had a talk with Tarek about this on my latest episode about fundamental shifts to allow you to have a competitive advantage. Each individual has specific knowledge because each individual is unique.
Yeah.
If you can be uniquely you, no one can copy you. And that's your USP. So the longer you just talk about you and what you interest and the experiences you've had and how you've learned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. no one can copy that. And if totally. You're being genuine, at some point people will relate to you and they'll respect you. In the beginning, they might hate you, for example, or they might dislike what you're saying. But if someone is consistent, everybody respects somebody who consistently puts themselves out there, and there's accountability. Posting a video online of you saying something is accountability. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if you're taking that accountability and you're being authentically you, then I think you have something that has longevity and nobody can copy it. And there's not a lot of things that people can't copy or do cheaper than you or have better quality, because nobody can be better at being you than you.
I absolutely agree with you. I agree with you. And it's more and more conversations nowadays about authenticity being the only way to build your media brand, because that actually attracts people mm-hmm. who relate to you specifically and to your sort of your personality.
For sure.
Let's talk podcast a little bit, because mm-hmm. you and Tarek, you've got a podcast that is called No Money But Dreams.
Yeah.
So I had a few thoughts with Tarek about the podcast that you started, but maybe you'll share your sort of side of the story.
Mm-hmm. So we started No Money But Dreams. I think we've done 32 episodes. So we've been on and off, not consistent, but it's something that we did together. And in the beginning, it was just us talking to each other about our life experiences, because we're so different. He's super in the corporate world and I'm completely in the other side.
Nice.
And I always curious what it would be like to be in his shoes, and he's right. always curious what it would be like to be in my shoes.
And
we've done a lot of business together. In the past, we worked on a startup and we went to the States. It was an idea called Driven. And Driven was this idea where someone would come to your house in the morning, pick you up in your car, take your car, drive you to work, and then use your car to generate you money while you're at work.
Wow.
So that would be like delivering parcels, being on Uber. We looked at this, like a vending machine in the boot. So like people could come and open it, like every single idea. And we pursued that. I think we spent maybe like in total 4 weeks or 5 weeks in LA on and off within a 1 year period, trying to figure out how we could do this startup and how we could. And since then, we've just built this bond, which is a really, really interesting bond. And NMBD was kind of just our discussions we used to have in the car or things we used to say to each other. And it's evolved. And I think for me and him in 2024, I'm definitely doubling down on it.
On the podcast.
Yeah. It needs to be once a week, and it has to be every week, if not more, twice a week. Because I just don't see how you can make really, really outsized returns in the 2020s unless you have two things, either your media or your code. And I'll give you a reason. And Naval breaks this down. If anyone hasn't listened to Naval, I suggest you listen to him. He's a genius. So media and code are two products with no cost of reproduction. There's no marginal cost of reproduction. The cost for me to record this podcast with you is, let's say, an hour of my time, whatever an hour of my time is worth. Let's say it's $1,000 for an hour of my time. The cost for Vuk to watch this, or for the whole of Dubai to watch this, doesn't cost me any more than that 1 hour that I gave to you. And that allows you to have outsized returns, and that allows you to scale in a way which is not possible if you're selling books.
Yeah.
I sell this book to you for 100, it cost me 50. I need to sell the second book, I still got to pay 50 for it. And the same thing goes with code. You can create a piece of code, let's say like Bitcoin. How much value has that piece of code accrued since it was created? Unbelievable. I don't even know. You know what I mean? I could write a piece of code now that allows you to book podcast studios, for example, and you could use it. Okay. Take away AWS fees and all that kind of stuff. You could use it, or a million people could use it, providing I have the server and the code is written properly. It wouldn't cost me any more time than the time it took me to make the code.
It's a question of, you know, whether this code is going to be as valuable or as unique or as, let's say, covering some certain gap in the market that is not yet covered, so to be able to scale and compete. It's the same as media. Same as media, exactly. It's the same as media, but you need to keep on trying. Yeah, I agree with you.
For sure.
No, it's, I think it's an absolutely, I mean, I've never looked at podcast or media brand the way you positioned it today. That right to you, sort of you kind of like calculated it, because people usually go into media because they feel natural about it and they started because that's kind of, I mean, I felt really shy about the fact that I like talking and I'm okay to be on the camera. I'm like, okay, can I call it a job?
Yeah, you can. And thank God you can, because of the internet.
And with time, now I'm gaining this, like, yeah, I absolutely can call it a job. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody has it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people like coding, as you mentioned. Some people like other things. And who are we to judge what is serious and what is not? Like, what is a job and what is not a job? I mean, conversations like this probably, like, they open, not even the eyes, but they open sort of like the emotional side of things where you, like, you let it go, right? You have
For
to,
sure,
yeah.
But I mean, look, if you look back at the printing press, you look at TV, you look at the internet, and now whatever's coming after, like artificial intelligence, these are all tectonic shifts in the way that we interact as human beings. And more people are on their phone. You go anywhere, everyone is glued to their phone. So if you know how to get in front of people, you can some way monetize that.
That's true. Yeah, you just need to keep on trying, I believe. So what was the best piece of advice from Farhad that you received over the last several months that keeps you up every day?
I wouldn't say there's anything that keeps me up, but he's an artist in short form video.
He is
like a Picasso of short form video. And just to be around him and to try and pick his brain. And I spend an hour with him every week. The hour I spend with him is just, I don't know, it's amazing. And I think that he's a savant in the area and in the business that he's built. And I don't think anyone can quite compete with him, to be honest with you.
So he is an inspiration.
Yeah, he's definitely an inspiration. He's an inspiration and he's my mentor when it comes to creating content, by far.
Good stuff. I was trying to get him on an interview, but I think it's just even more difficult than to get you.
No, I'm sure you can get him.
Yeah, yeah, publicly. Yeah. Farhad, I want to interview you.
Yeah, Farhad, you have to come on.
So if you were to choose any mentor in the world, like any mentor in the world, either on business, on your personal life, on your, I don't know, who would that be?
It has to be Elon Musk. Yeah, that guy, if you haven't read his autobiography, you have to read his autobiography. It's incredible. And I actually saw a post the other day of all the companies that he's created. Like, it's just incredible. Every entrepreneur hopes to hit the nail on the head. And I guess you could say a $1 billion company is really, you've made it, right? And if you look at entrepreneur like sports, which I kind of do, and you have different seasons. Anything meaningful takes around 5 years to build, in my opinion. That's a meaningful business to find product market fit. That's a meaningful relationship to know that you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody. That's a meaningful friendship. You know that person's not going to backstab you, etc. It takes around 5 years. Now, from 20 to 30, maybe in the last 2 years, getting close to 30, you kind of understand what's going on. But like your early 20s, like I'm surprised I survived to 25, to be honest. You know, like when my son or daughter reaches, hopefully not my daughter, but when my son reaches 25 and he's still alive, I'm going to be like, whew.
Oh, really?
Good job. Yeah, man, you do so many silly things that are uncalculated that you don't know. Like if you really go back from like 18 to 25 and you really think about some of the things you did, like they were really crazy. I mean, at least for me, I did some really ridiculous things. So I forgot where I was going. Anyways, yeah, no. So around 30, you kind of need to get your shit together and understand what's going on in life. That doesn't mean that anyone, like you need to know exactly, but no, you need to kind of have a direction. What do you like? What do you not like? What are some of the skills that you have? How can you leverage those skills? So in entrepreneurship, you have 30 to 35. You have 35 to 40, 40 to 45, 45 to 50, 55 to 50, 50 to 55. At around 55, starting a new company with 100% risk and everything, I haven't been there yet. I'm not going to judge everybody who's 55, but that's a lot more difficult than 35. Yeah, where you have less to lose, you have more chances. So these are like your seasons, right? Every 5 years you have a season. And you have multiple times to try and hit the nail on the head and get product market fit. But he's just done it so many times.
Yeah.
SpaceX, Boring, Tesla. What was the other? There's like two others which I saw. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
you know,
he is a risk taker. Is he a risk taker or is he a genius? I don't know.
He's a genius and he's willing to put everything on the line for what he believes in. And I think that's what people get behind him, like his staff get behind him and work. He's worth $200 billion. But if there's a problem on the assembly line of Tesla, he will sleep on the assembly line. Mm-hmm. He'll not leave. How can you not be inspired to work for somebody like that?
I think you definitely, you get inspired.
You know, and if you're not inspired by somebody like that, why would you work for them? So it cuts out all the bullshit. Like even look at Twitter. He came in and axed, I don't know how many of the staff like that. Everyone was uproared and this and that. They didn't need that many people.
Yeah.
There was too much meat on the bone.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I think he's turned Twitter into something which is better than it was before. He's audacious. He changed the name of Twitter to X. Like he doesn't care. There was a clip that was circulating that went viral about Bob Iger boycotting advertising on X.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, "Are you blackmailing me with money? Fuck you."
Yeah.
Did anybody hear that? Is that clear? Like,
I saw it. Yeah, it was viral.
He has something about him. He will not put up with shit. Right now, the government in the US, the Biden government, is trying to go and attack him on everything they can. If you see the list of all the different agencies, governmental agencies looking into Elon Musk, I don't know if you heard about it. They're like, why did you were going to build a glass house for like $50,000 in Tesla. That's a misappropriation of funds. What the hell, man? It's like a witch hunt, you know?
Well, I think Elon Musk is a great example of how authenticity and a very unique personality attracts people who like him specifically. Because I'm sure there will be plenty of people who will say, Elon Musk, seriously? No way. No. He did a terrible thing out of Twitter and everything like that. I can hear the voices who will tell a totally controversial kind of opinion.
For sure.
But I think that's exactly what we're talking about, right? Your authentic self attracts people who who like you, who follow you, who follow a piece of advice.
Yeah, you have to stand for something.
Yeah.
You need to be accountable.
Yeah.
You have to put your neck out and be able to have people have like engage in conversation with you, number one. But then also stand by what you think. You know what I mean? Don't be swayed by somebody else's opinion just because it's the popular opinion. Like in entrepreneurship, if everybody's doing something, it's probably the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you learn that really fast. So in modern media or in what people are talking about, if everybody's on this side of the fence, you need to be looking about how to get over there. And I think he's always on the cutting edge of that. And I admire him for that.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you very much for this conversation. I really enjoyed every minute of it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for making it.
Sure.
And happy coming 2024.
You too. Have a nice day.
And hope we talk again.
I would love to. Anytime.